All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy.
Join the Kiss FAQ YouTube channel. Member perks include exclusive song story demo bites, songs of the moment with contextual introductions, document and merchandise dives, Kiss FAQ board topic reaction videos, early access to channel content, and hopefully lots more. Click the join button on the Kiss FAQ YouTube channel or follow this link.
All right, wakey wakey, everyone. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us live. There's a whole bunch of folks who are already joining us live. So, yeah, the channel, the private side of it, is starting to develop. On Monday, an early access episode of Song Stories goes up. A Beacon at Midnight, which will get us started for the 50th anniversary month of Dress to Kill, which is going to be fun. There's going to be some demo stories, additional ones for the whole channel, but also early access for members for that. I can't even remember what else went up this week. So if you're so inclined, check out the channel. I'm going to be doing quite a bit of material for it, a few things each week, at least two, and we'll see how it develops. I've just lost my train of fucking thought.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah, meat is in the mailroom. Did anyone get anything new this week? Because none of the stuff that I've ordered arrived, but I was going through some of the magazines that I'd bought recently, and a ticket stub from Madison Square Garden 96 dropped out. So I was actually pretty pleased with that bonus. Cool. I have to go back and check the auction and see if it was advertised as being included. Ken, what did you buy? Anything?
Yeah, I bought this back in 1980, which is.
I think he means a recent buy, but yeah.
I don't have any recent buys, so here I just want to point out something. So this is the
Kiss: The Real Story by Peggy Kiss, Tamarki.
Oh, this is that other thing where you can't do it.
Yeah, you can't see because of the.
Hold it.
The struggle is real, Ken. Now you know how I feel every episode of these freaking backgrounds.
I gotta do it at the angle. Wow.
Doesn't work.
Kind of. Anyway.
You gotta kill
the background. Oh, there it is, there it is.
There you go.
Yay, don't move.
So anyway, yeah, I remember buying this at Tower Records. I thought, I'm looking in the book section. Well, it's Tower Records, and they had the book section. It said Tower Books. So I was over there. I always kind of check out the magazines and everything else. And I saw, what, Kiss? A book? Is that, so this is the first official book from Kiss. Of course, there was those other little paperbacks that were written by Kiss, or, you know, for about Kiss. But this one came out, it was 1980 published. And I was going to say, it has a lot of, you know, cool pictures and stuff in it and whatnot throughout. It's pictures and large text. And the one thing that I just want to point out to Julian in here is this is coming from Kiss, right? So January.
It's accurate then.
Yeah. So again, we just had that anniversary, well, last year, right? So February 18th. Or no, February 18th, but January 8th. Let's see. Played the Fillmore. The February 18th. Where is it I saw that the album came out? It showed that the album came out.
Oh, the album date doesn't matter. But
anyway, they were saying the 8th or something. But anyway, yeah. January 8th, 74.
Yeah, I've showed the telex that has the original wrong date being communicated to people. So there's a page in Mask Hysteria on that book and how it came to be, because originally it was going to be the David Leaf book, but they decided to go with Peggy's because it was lower reading level.
Yeah. I mean, so large text like
less,
that.
So less big words, Daniel.
Not a lot to this thing, but it's all right.
Yeah, it was a cool product. Lonnie, you bought any Kiss stuff recently? Because you've not been around for a couple of weeks,
have you? Kiss stuff? No, I have not.
I guess I'm saving my money for these. Well, you know, well, other than the $50,000,
you didn't buy one
record that I bought. No.
Ooh. No, he didn't buy one. He bought two.
Yeah. One of each. Yeah.
Wow, there's only three left.
Right. No. With that price tag, I'm saving my KISS funds because I'm sure those box sets are not going to be cheap.
Mm. Yeah. What was your thought on the 5-inch golden and plated single, just briefly, to catch
you know, I think it's just an attention getter, kind of like the Monster book wasn't a, you know, an attention getter type thing. Like, hey, look at us, look what we're doing, you know, type of thing. You know, I don't know. Have they sold any of the, did anyone buy the 50,000?
I heard one. I heard one.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
You know, I guess maybe the same one guy who bought a Monster book, I guess. I really don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess they'll do more. Why not? If somebody's going to buy it, I bet they do more. What makes you think it's going to be a one-time thing?
Yes, and they've sold quite a few of the plated ones, so, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking that it was so high priced that they would that it's going to make the box sets seem like they're pennies, you know.
Well, that's to be determined. So,
yeah, Daniel, we'll have to wait and see about that, though.
Any purchases, or have you got any upcoming podcast or pod appearances coming up? Let me know. Doesn't a new season kick off?
Yeah, I'm doing an episode this week. I have a sports holiday this upcoming week.
Sports holiday?
I don't know.
We don't even get that.
You never get that over there?
Not a sports holiday.
You guys.
Shoot for the Super Bowl.
You guys should be the Super Bowl, right?
I mean, but you have to call him sick that day, right, Lonnie?
You don't understand how screwed you are, guys. You don't understand. You need a sports holiday in order to be able to go, you know,
day after Super Bowl.
Down the slope, go for some downhill skiing. Well, however, I'm doing an episode this upcoming week because I'm off from work, and we'll be discussing a favorite album, much like we do on the rock and roll, what do we call it? The other channel.
It's rock and roll.
Look, it's rock and roll. It's been so long.
Exactly. It's been so long.
We need to do an episode.
So we're doing that kind of stuff, and I'm actually going to talk about. I don't know if you see this LP back here, Rocky IV soundtrack. That's my pick.
Oh, Rocky IV.
Nice.
Marcus Laffey.
Motivational music.
It's one
maybe.
Of the best motivational music ever.
Such I will great. Break
Along
you.
With, does it have Living in America on it?
It does.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Oh, yeah. James Brown.
Fantastic song.
And the
video.
Fantastic acting from the Swedish guy, Dolph Lundgren, as Ivan Drago.
The great acting, yes.
The mean Russian. Well, so that's an upcoming episode. So if you want to listen to that.
Easy with the mean Russian talk this morning.
Yeah, we've been fighting the Russians forever over here, you know. So, I saw
fighting.
That meeting your president had with the president of Ukraine. It went over real well. Well, no politics, sorry.
Is it not a politics channel?
It's transparent. Yeah, you know, everything's transparent.
All right, Mark, how about you? How have you shipped all your records out yet? Have you signed them all?
Oh, God, no. Well, I've been still working on that. The poster should be coming sometime this week. But for anybody who is interested, this coming Friday on progrock.com, they'll be doing a album of the week segment on my latest album, Canada Stories and Legends. I will be in the chat room discussing with people. Those things are always fun. They always go very well. And anybody's interested, and it's I believe at 2:00 Eastern Standard Time in the afternoon. There you go. As for buying anything, I haven't gotten anything yet. I did order a couple t-shirts from KISS online.
Right.
Awesome. Okay.
I got a spam email from them yesterday. So.
That's
about the walk.
Yeah, so let's get started on some of the topics. There's actually quite a bit happening at the moment.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun. It's very cool. What was it? Metal Rules did an interview with Mike Stone of Queensryche, who had been a member of KISS. And it's actually very good. There's a lot of positivity that comes out of him about his time in both bands, because he was in Queensryche and then went back into to the Reich as well. So a very good interview. Who got the chance to check that interview out? And any thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, I read it all because I am a Queensryche fan. And the interesting part about that is when he recalls his time when he was with Peter Criss's band there, because he has, you know, he had a very positive spin on everything in that interview, which is great. I mean, you know, why do a negative thing when you don't need to? And I just found that his views on that time compared to Peter, how he talked about it in his biography, there was a little bit of a, you know, they didn't seem, not, they didn't have any bitterness toward each other, but, you know, Peter Criss was at that point where he was just dreading doing that. In his book, at least, he was saying that, and that he just was looking forward to the time that it was going to be over and done with, you know, and when the Kiss thing happened, he was so happy, you know. Oh, you guys read the book, you know what happened, right? But it's interesting, it was Mike Stone has a different sort of rosy tinted glasses version of that time too, but you know, he did enjoy it, obviously, you know, because he got to play with one of his heroes and one of his, you know, longtime bands that he loved growing up with. So, but I thought it was very good, and I liked the comments he made about, you know, Queensryche and why he left and when he came back. Interesting that he was in a jazz trio for that long a time in between that. I never would have pegged him as a jazz guitarist at that time, but interesting interview, and I think it's a good read if you're interested in him and Queensryche and that whole period.
Yeah, Talvis Alex has carried the banner for Criss over the years, with material regularly being posted on YouTube, for, I believe, from Mark Montague's collection. You know, so rehearsals, all sorts of material. So I need to go back and really sit down with all that material. I have a reevaluation. But it was refreshing to have someone saying positive things about Kiss, positive things about the Peter Criss band and Peter's efforts as a solo artist in the early 90s, because it really gets lost in the muddle. And I actually like some of the stuff on those albums, you know, and a lot of the demos, going back to the stuff with Phil Narrow. So it was great to hear just the little slice of history, the positivity. It was refreshing. No axe to grind. It's just, it really makes a nice change. Anyone else get a chance to check out that interview and share their thoughts?
Yeah, I read it as well. And we haven't really gone through the solo albums on the Kiss FAQ podcast, but the other week we did a deep dive into Criss Cat One at the Let Me Know podcast. And that was the first time I heard that album for decades. And I have to say, it's not one of my favorites. There are some stuff there that's okay, like Blue Moon over Brooklyn and one or two others, but I don't know. It wasn't a favorite of mine. So when I read this interview, the thing, much like Julian said, I was pleasantly surprised that this guy had such great memories of this time, and that he actually gave accolades to Peter Criss, and it seemed like he thought he treated him fairly, and that Peter Criss did a good job, because when you read the biography, this was really a downtime for Criss. And even when you read the lyrics to the songs, some of them are really paranoid and strange, those lyrics. So, but it's a cool listen. So if you have some time, we'll go back and listen to Criss Cat One. It's a fun listen, but not one of my favorites.
Lonnie?
I have not read it, though.
Then you're going to go first on the Gene Simmons song. Ken, what about you?
Check out I read it. Same thing. It was very positive, you know, like you guys said. I like it, like you said. He was really excited. Says, you know, I got to play, you know, when I was playing with Peter, and I could hear his you know, unique swing style of playing on a rock and roll song. And he says, you know, I play, you know, this is effing Peter Criss, you know. And so I thought that's cool. You know, I'm sure it was an exciting thing for him, being a fan of Kiss. So, yeah, it was a good little interview.
Yep, Titania, thanks for the catnips. Yeah, it was Could It Be Love, a sample of that went up today. There's one more queued up. We'll see how they do to justify whether they continue. And if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. But all that stuff's out there. Yeah, so let's talk about Gene Simmons, new music. Well, kind of, sort of. With, what was the group? The Stylistics?
Stylistics, right.
Yeah. Featuring Gene Simmons and the Tower of Power on Don't Leave Me Here. I was absolutely blown away by this. Lonnie, what were your thoughts on it?
I don't know if I have a lot of thoughts. I'm unprepared for today's show.
Does someone not do their homework?
No, no problem. Let's go straight back to the voice of reason. Let the mouth of Gene speak himself.
Mouth of Gene. I listened to it. I thought, oh yeah, Stylistics. Wow. Oh wow. Okay. Because this band that's been around a long time. I don't know if they're the original. I didn't check into that or anything, if it's any original guys. They look like it. They're pretty darn old. So I'm guessing they're possibly all original or close to it. But yeah, when I said Gene Simmons, I'm like, what? And I thought that was kind of coming out of left field. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, yeah, okay, let's check this out. And it's a good, nice song, cool song. It makes sense. I like the horns and the whole bit, Tower of Power, that stuff. It's all produced well. Nice song. Gene's vocals are pretty good. There's nothing wrong about it. I like his vocals on it. His little, it's not the main vocal, but he has some solo kind of vocals on it, and so on. It's cool. It's cool to hear Gene doing something, some recording still. And I'm hoping he does other recording, maybe for himself or his band. If he gets the urge to do that, I'm sure they could whip out some of his old stuff that he's got sitting in the can.
We don't want him whipping any of his old stuff out. Not allowed to do that anymore.
Well, finish then.
Daniel.
The Tower of Power, Mark, isn't that a line from a Frank Zappa song, isn't it? I think it's a line from one of you.
Line from
that
a Gene Simmons song.
Yeah, there's a line from a few songs. Yeah,
yeah, it might be. But however, I can't understand how the hell Gene hooked up with these guys.
Yeah.
But it's really something from left field. That being said, I think it's pretty cool to hear that Gene still can carry it. I think his vocals are pretty good on this one, but what I would like to see is, of course, an EP or something from his Gene Simmons band, some rocking stuff. So as we can hear, he still can bring it vocally. Why not release a few songs, write them together with your touring band and release them? That's what I would like to see. Or you can make sort of a live recording and release it on Spotify and YouTube and sell 100 LPs to the real Kiss fan. Yeah, devoter, or there's other words for that, but I won't say that. To the fans that like LPs, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not overbearing, but my immediate thing was, how is Gene all of a sudden interested in that sort of music? And as noted by Super Zapper, that seemed to be stepping into Paul's territory a little bit, but Paul's not doing anything other than his art at the moment, and probably, I don't know if he can, to be perfectly honest with how he sounds when he talks. So Gene's it was refreshing.
Gene's been piggybacking on Paul lately. He did the same stuff with, the paintings there. When he saw that Paul got some success with the paintings, he suddenly became a painter. Paul Stanley releases...
Yeah, he didn't keep going.
No, but he mimicked Paul, at least. Just to show off,
Paul. See, Paul Stanley inspires... Paul Stanley inspires everyone, Daniel, even Gene.
Yeah, or is it like this? And well, if Paul can do it, Gene says, I can do it better, and he wants to show... Paul.
And clearly
I'm going to get something. I'm going to get something. I think I have a Stylistics Greatest Hits. I'll bring it over here.
Why am I not surprised Ken has a Stylistics Greatest Hits? I've got Lil Lancy and the Imperials. All right, Mark, your thoughts, please, sir.
Well, I listened to it in full. The first time I listened to it, I was like, wait a minute, what is he doing in this song? The only time I kind of caught him was when he did that, that really deep little low voice thing in there that he kind of threw in, but I couldn't pick him out of the singing at first. I was like, that doesn't sound like his voice, normal voice. I had to go back a couple times, like, is that him singing there? I mean, it's clearly not his, his sort of, oh yeah, voice or any of those voices in there. So, Luckily, I mean, he's, well, not luckily, but obviously he can sing in many different timbres of voice, and, you know, he can sing that style, obviously, pretty decently. So because I couldn't pick him out amongst the other, you know, brothers in the choir there, I didn't, you know, I guess it's a good showing of how he can do those different styles. Now he can kind of, you know, blend in with it. Because I couldn't pick him out the first time around. I couldn't pick him out at all, what he was singing and who was, what the other guys were singing at all. Maybe it was just me, but, you know, maybe the tuned voice, you know, Ken, you know, the master and, you know, sympathizer of Gene Simmons and all things Gene Simmons, probably he could have picked him out immediately when he heard his voice, you know, because that's like the siren song for Ken, Gene's voice. So, you know, whenever he hears them, you know, it's music to his ear. So I don't know. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, very nice. By golly, wow.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, some of the big hits, Betcha, By Golly, Wow, Break Up to Make Up, You Make Me Feel Brand New.
That's a song called Wow there?
Betcha, By Golly, Wow. It's
a, oh, okay, song. I was going to say that could be featuring Lonnie.
I'm Stone in Love with You. You ever hear that one?
Wow.
It has a lot of great songs on it. That's why I bought this one.
Okay, but Gene should make a cover.
Grew up with that.
From Break Up to Make Up. 70s. That would work.
That'd be Peter, since that's the title of his
book.
Yeah,
exactly. The makeup would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, let's stay on the new music theme, because this is how the shows are going to be. You just don't know what's going to happen now from week to week. There's going to be little bits of this, little bits of that. And podcasts are just going to focus on whatever is current and then do our deep dives like we'll do next week into you know, certain albums. So, maybe Lonnie has an opinion on this. And Ace called into Eddie Trunk the other day, or yesterday, it might have been actually, for the Cochran Memorial that Eddie was doing. And while on the air, he was talking to Eddie about Origins Volume 3. And he made the announcement that he wouldn't be using Steve Brown. He was going back to Alex Saltzman for Origins Volume 3. So, Lonnie, you know, what's your thought on, you know, Origins Volume 3 going back to the traditional kind of method Ace had of working with someone like Alex rather than putting Steve Brown to the side for now?
I'd rather stick with Steve Brown. I thought his new album sounded better than anything he's put out in a long time, including the Origins album. So I'm disappointed with that news, actually, because I think Steve Brown got more out of Ace than we had gotten in a while. I'm disappointed. Not that I'm like waiting on pins and needles for the new Origins album. I mean, again, we've talked about that, but you know, it'll come out. We'll listen to it for a week. We'll do a show about it. And then I don't know when I'll listen to it again after that. So, but I think it'd be different, and it'd be, you know, and more exciting if he was sticking with Steve Brown. So I'm kind of disappointed about that.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about him talking about how he has a formula for these things and how easy it is to do, because he doesn't have to write the songs. So, I mean, that's perfect. That sounds perfect for AZ, who's, you know, known to be a little bit lazy. Mm. But it also sounds like Lita Ford will be on speed dial. Maybe Bruce Kulick will be on speed dial, or Johnny Five. I want him to think outside the box when it comes to doing Origins. Each one shouldn't be like the other, but there should be a theme. So he also mentioned that he hadn't thought about redoing any Kiss songs on this one, which I think would be a very good idea, not to redo any Kiss songs. I wouldn't be against him redoing a Frehley's Comet song, or going back and maybe revisiting some other demos. Exactly, Daniel. Mm-hmm. So what's your thoughts on that, Daniel?
Yeah, I think he's got a lot of great demos from the early 80s or the mid 80s that he could revisit and do something with. But I guess that could maybe be for the next record, his next record. And he didn't rule out still working with this Brown guy. So I think he'll reconnect with that guy for the next studio album, because the last studio album was pretty good, I think. I think it was way over what I expected him to be able to do at this point of time. So reconnect with that guy for the studio. Origins is what it is, you know. I have to agree with Lonnie. It's fun for a week or two, and then it's over. So it really doesn't matter. And it's been a long time since he made something special with a cover. you know, he's known for being able to do covers and do them in a better way than the original was performed. But I think it was a long time ago since he really topped an original recording. So I think I don't have very high expectations. I do, however, think it's great that he's so productive and still put out records. You have to give him props for that. So I welcome the record, but it won't, you know, shake the ground or something for
shake
me.
Shake your foundations?
Yeah, that's what's the word. Those big words that I always forget. But that's what was the word I was looking for. So it is what it is. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, Max had a good point in the chat. Ace's vocal sounded auto-tuned on 10,000 volts. And I think that was both a matter of necessity and also Steve Brown, that they had to get the album done, and it's quicker to say, I'll fix it, rather than Ace sing that again.
But so, real fast, I don't know if you guys seen some of his latest shows that have done, his live shows. I think some of them have been pretty good, I think, both vocally and the way he's playing. So, he's kind of a hit and miss guy. Sometimes he nails it, and sometimes he doesn't. But I still think he can bring a pretty interesting show, and he can carry the vocals pretty well still.
Yeah, you also made another good point about, you know, he used to make covers his own. Now he just records the songs.
Yeah.
And I think it's a matter of time and effort that he doesn't spend enough time actually woodshedding that song and finding where Ace Frehley comes in and
woodshedding
stamps it. So, Ken, sorry, I'm monologuing.
Yeah. I don't know. It's fine. Yeah, he's going to have someone else to do Origins, I guess, or back to what he's done before. I'd rather have Steve Brown probably too. If it's going to be like his prior two, I'm unless there's something exciting on there, I'm not going to buy it. Wow. I'm just not going to buy it unless there's something really good that entices me, like Gene Simmons.
This is big news.
Yeah, let's change
like Gene, the vocal
game changer.
I don't know. I don't listen to the prior. I just don't listen to him. I probably listen to them like once or twice, and then that's it. They're filed away. I have no desire to go back to those. I'd rather go back to his regular solo albums instead of the Origins. That's what I want. I want him to do the solo stuff and, you know, redo some of his old demos.
But Ken, which is your favorite Ace Frehley solo album?
Other than 1978?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't count. We all love it.
All right. Well, I don't know. I like the first Frehley's Comet album. I like Trouble Walking. Mm-hmm. I like Space Invader a lot. So those few, you know, I like a lot.
I go for Trouble Walking. Easy.
Yeah, it's a good album.
All right, Mark, you've been so patient.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same camp with you guys. I have the Origins on both CD and vinyl, unbelievably, but I never listened to them. I mean, I think that when the first one came out, I listened to it once on vinyl and maybe once in the car on CD, and the same thing with the second one as well. And the whole Steve Brown thing doesn't really affect me one way or another, because it's covers. You know, if this was another album of originals, then I would be very concerned if he didn't bring him back, because he obviously helped him immensely in that record. But cover songs, I mean, as long as you pick a decently good cover song, you can't really botch it too badly. I mean, even Ace couldn't really probably botch them too badly. But, you know, as long as it's a decent song that people like, you know, you can't go wrong with, you know, like a Thin Lizzy song or a Deep Purple song or here's an idea, do a UFO song, dude. That would be a good idea, or something along that lines, you know, or a Grand Funk or something, and get Bruce to come in and guest on it, you know. Just I think that there's not so much of a concern with that, and maybe he's also doesn't have to pay as much to have the other guy with him as much as he would have had to maybe with the other dude, who knows, you know. That could be a factor as well. Right, but I don't know. I'm kind of like with Ken. I have two of them. the third one, there's had to be something really, really impressive on there to kind of go down that road now, especially since vinyl's gone up so much in cost over the last year or so. I'm not going to drop like $50 for a single record, or, you know, $60 for a double record of Ace Frehley covers, you know, so I'll just buy the digital version and that's the end of that.
Hey, a great question from Wade Lucas. Julian, you have to address that one.
Oh God.
Yeah, I don't really have any comment on that other than what I may have said in the threads, which anyone can go and read. It's just been done to death. And to be perfectly honest, I'm completely tired of the whole fiasco surrounding the Sam Loomis shit, which just bores me no end at this point.
Daniel loves bringing up the controversy.
Yeah, well, that's his job. You know, he likes to throw me in the deep end and watch me squirm.
That's very unsweetish. You guys are very neutral.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
that's true.
No, yeah, when I can answer, I will answer stuff, but I don't have anything to add. You know, we've all seen the drama going around. We've all seen someone being thrown under the bus for whatever reasons. And, you know, eventually they you know, call it lash out or try and set the record straight.
I'm rooting for Andrew in this.
No, you're not. You're rooting for Sam Loomis because you guys all want more fucking video. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Sam Loomis. Whoever you are. You're the Sam Loomis for president. Our most successful episode that year.
Yeah, no, those did do very well, and a bunch of Van Halen shit dropped the other day as well for that world.
Yeah,
I found that nauseatingly boring. You know, most of it was silent. I just don't love Van Halen enough to give a shit. I think I watched 2.5 videos, scanned through some others. I'm like, this is as bad as watching 8mm silent footage. You know, just did nothing for me. So
I hate that too, the 8mm.
Yes,
stuff.
You did, Wade. You know it. and if not, Daniel certainly did. Let's move on rapidly.
Rapidly. To the next subject.
Yeah.
Now for something completely different. Okay.
Yeah. How about Bruce Kulick? We were talking about him a moment ago, and he's had his memories up on Ultimate Guitar, recalling jamming with Ace and Vinnie Vincent. Bruce Kulick reveals what went wrong at that event, and that was.
Did anyone of you attend that show?
Hell no.
No.
No. What went wrong is Neil had the audacity to think that he could put Vinnie Vincent in a musical scenario that didn't end as a clusterfuck.
It was close. I think it was pretty close. He succeeded. But...
You know, respect to Neil. Close. Neil brought it. Close. You know, Neil brought the event. Cigar. That's where the Loomis shit first started surfacing,
well,
by the way.
The other show.
Before selling Largo. But the show, Ken, go.
Yeah, no, we got the episode on Kiss FAQ, which is called Wink on the Tank. So that's what came out of that thing. And great yeah, title. I heard the Bruce Kulick or read it, or I can't remember. I think I read it. Yeah, I mean, he was pretty good about it, but he knew it was kind of messed up. And with the, they were expecting a drummer out there and no drummer was there, and then there was a drum machine, and then they had to try to fucking, I guess, count in, you know,
backing like, tracks they had.
They had backing tracks, and it was just a mess.
It's just basically a shred backing track. It's just like three chords over and over again, and he did a solo over top of it. I mean,
yeah, and then he did his shredding, just guy
can do that.
His crazy shredding noodling thing, and it's just. Yeah, to me that was kind of too bad. Though I think Bruce did say he enjoyed at least being with the other guys, you know, to a degree. And
well,
more so Ace.
The history of the moment, the three of them.
And Ace is like, oh, well, if you're gonna, you know, you're gonna do it, I'll do it, you know, kind of thing. Go out there and
just
perform because it's for, like Bruce said, for the fans mostly, anyway.
Yeah, Solani, the ank guitar wank on the tank that stank.
Yeah, and Bruce talked about how he had high hopes for it, and I could, you know, Bruce kind of reminds me of Ken. Ken's a little bit. Like, he's a nice guy. He is. He's a nice guy. He's hopeful about things. You know, it kind of reminded me of Ken in this interview. Like, oh, I had high hopes for this. And like, optimistic Ken, I always tease him about. And it just turns out to be a disaster. You know, we've seen the footage. It just turns out just to be like, what are we doing? So, you know, I read it too. Like, you know, we thought, well, I think they kind of got there, and it's just like, you know, really, this is how it's going to be. This is what we're doing. Like, they count in, and like, this is not what I, you know, like that he had built it up in his mind, I think, of how it was going to be. And, I think he was disappointed in how it turned out. And, you know, I think a lot of the people that were there felt the same way. So,
yeah. Hey, Vinny loved the moment. You see him standing up on that stage. I mean, he looked like a guitarist in a puddle of water getting tasered. All right, Daniel.
In the center on top.
Yeah, there's nothing more to say about that. It was a great idea. I think the guy who put it all together did his best, but you can't really do anything more than this with Vinny Vincent. He's a nutcase, and we all know that, so... This was, and after this, we've seen actually nothing from Venus. So this is kind of his last hooray, being up on that tank, wanking the hell out of the guitar with a backing track. You know, he didn't want a drummer. What crazy shit is that? I don't want a drummer. I want a backing track. I've never heard any guitarist say that. So, you know, it is what it is. But I think it was pretty funny to watch from afar.
Yeah. All right, Mark, last.
Well, it's funny when you say that you've never heard of any guitar player who wanted no drummer. If you read that Bobby Rock story about him when he was with Vinny and they were doing the album, Vinny made it very clear that he just couldn't stand drummers and that he loves the sound of drum machines, that he would rather that any day of the week than any kind of drummer, which I don't understand either.
But Mark, you being a guitarist, you don't love the sound.
No, I don't love it. I mean, I love playing with a human being, obviously, because you have the interaction between them and different feels and different, you know, things happen back and forth. You can improvise easier with a real person, right? So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that, of course. But, I mean, for him, obviously, the promoter guy wanted to keep him most comfortable in the situation because I guess he had the feeling that if anything was even the slightest bit wrong, you could see Vinny out the door, like running out the door with bags in hand, right? So he probably wanted to keep everything happy with him, and then Ace and Bruce were left looking at each other with their hands like, what the fuck's going on here? And, you know, hats off to them, though, especially Ace, for kind of just saying, you know what, Bruce, if you do it, I'll do it. And, you know, we'll just go up there and play. And then wasn't there a situation, too, where they said that Ace's speaker went out? Like somebody yanked the speaker cord out of his cabin and his guitar dropped for him. I mean, it just sounds like complete disaster waiting to happen there for that whole thing. So I really think that it's maybe one of those historical moments. If just to see a moment where there's those three people on the same stage together, you probably never, ever see that ever again happen. So in that sense, maybe it's a historical Kiss moment, but I would never implore anyone to go searching through the YouTube archives looking for that moment, because you're not missing too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, it just sounded like a moment of professionalism, and I'm not surprised at all by Bruce Kulick being professional. I more admire Ace's reaction to it, how there was some camaraderie and mutual support. Let's just do it. You know, so there was some outside thinking about the fans, or maybe it was their own reputations as well at stake on that. So again, respect to Neil for trying it, but you know, let's move on. Lonnie, I don't know if you had a chance to check out Destroyer as if it was recorded in the 50s. There's a link for that, and I strongly recommend checking it out. It is one of the wildest things that anyone can hear. And they're doing this, they've got Metallica Master of Puppets if it was recorded. It's wild shit, Daniel.
I've listened to it. It's fantastic, and at the same time really scary, because I guess this is AI doing the stuff. And I mean, that 50s version of Detroit Rock City, it's pretty good. think it's yeah, but if you like 50s music, I think, you know, everything from the vocals to the playing, it sounds pretty cool. It's scary, I think. To me, it's just plain scary that people can press a button and create a record that would take, you know, months to record a few years back, and now they just do it by pressing a few buttons. And I don't know where all this music thing is going from here, because this is just crazy. And the Metallica stuff, same thing. Sounds like it's supposed to sound. It sounds like, you know, the real thing. And you still have the vocals sounding cool and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah. Now the stretch will be to have something recorded in the 50s sound like it was recorded in the 90s. I want to see the flip side of the coin. I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought God of Thunder was fantastic. And Beth. Beth was actually incredible.
Mark,
I didn't
is just
find...
laughing through the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all fake shit, but come on. Yeah. You know, for a momentary diversion. Mark?
I couldn't think of something more painful for me to listen to than Destroyer and then put into a 50s version on top of that, you know?
Well, it wasn't produced by Bob Ezrin.
Yeah, it wasn't produced by Bob.
Is it a best?
Right? You should enjoy it.
AI Bob.
You should enjoy the production.
No, you know what I especially didn't enjoy it is because, listen, I would have gave it a lot more props if it was actually somebody who went down, recorded it.
Yeah.
With real instrumentation, did it himself and sang. And I would say, okay, great. You know, he kind of, you know, kind of like how that Double Vertigo guy did his remake of that Kiss song there and did it a 70s style.
Secret. Don't get me started on Secretly Cool.
Yeah,
Secretly Cruel.
Yeah. Like that I tipped my hat on because he took the song, made it into a 70s version, but he did it all himself. He did the music all himself. He re-sang it himself. But there's nothing to be proud of with this. It's just a fucking bad record done in AI, and it was very difficult listen. I mean, some of it was comical, I found, on there, but I mean, come on, man, if you're gonna go down that path, record it, pick up your guitar, you know, if you were smart enough to, you know, think of this idea, then be smart enough to record it yourself and then show me, you know, your real talent of this. I mean, any Joe Schmo can go on there and say, hey, I got a great idea. Let's take a Green Day album and make it sound how it would be in the 40s. Like, and then let AI do it all. Like, give me a break. You know, come on.
But I think that's a problem. In the future, that will be the thing. Any guy will be able to record anything, and it will sound pretty good.
But that's not a real
no, it's not. But it's just
bullshit,
the way of that's how it is now. That's where it's going.
Yeah, the upgrade to auto-tune is going to be one hell of a tool. You know, basically it takes out the band, the writers, and everything out of the equation. So now it's auto-tune is literally automatically
if you do a great prompt, you get a great album.
You know, embrace the technology. I embrace technology every day with musical stuff. But I mean, technology in tandem with people who actually have talent is one thing. But technology for it's just plain laziness. That's all it is. It's complete laziness.
There's a matter of balance. AI is here. There's nothing we can do about it. AI has, you know, already ravaged the FAQ and all my books and everything that I've ever created.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But I use AI on a daily basis when it comes to image cleanup, when it comes to AI stem separation for cleaning up audio, for fixing bits of songs that are chopped out. So I haven't gone to the level of turning, say, Straight Outta Compton into a Mexican mariachi version. And I never will, because there is abuse of technology. There always will be. Ken, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I've heard that one. And they did another one, too. Didn't they do another Kiss one, too? But anyway, the music is not at all the same music. It's just made-up music pretty much to the lyrics of the Kiss songs. So there's nothing resembling the Kiss, you know, song structure or anything. To me, it's a waste of time. I mean, it sounds like 50s, and it's using Kiss lyrics from that album and that sort of thing. but it's like, whatever. I remember buying a CD. I think I still have it. Back years or early 2000s, there was a Kiss Bluegrass.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll see. Yeah, I thought that was kind of fun. That was actually kind of fun, and it was like, oh, this is actually not too bad, you know, surprisingly. And I like, you know, I like bluegrass.
Hazy Dixie.
Yeah, that's right. And I thought that was kind of fun. Yeah, that is. And people actually, like you said, Mark, recorded the music, and it wasn't AI and all this stuff.
Yeah.
There's some, what do you call it, realness to it, of course, realness to it, but something about it, soul, I guess is the word, authentic and soul to the performances and stuff like that, where AI has no soul.
Mm-hmm. There you go, it doesn't. All right, I just want to quickly touch on Rome Loves Dan. Ace should record all the classic 78 type songs. Yeah, it's the same. Tom passed away. So I don't know what the future for Classic 78 is going to be. But you made me think of something. Ace should actually go in and record one of the Kiss songs post his lineup. He's already done Rock and Roll Hell. But on the Farewell Tour, they did Heaven's on Fire, I Love It Loud, Lick It Up, Ace Frehley doing Lick It Up, or Ace Frehley doing Psycho Circus.
No.
Out of This World. Ace Frehley doing Out of This World.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Paul Stanley, the very last show. He explained why no members were featured at the end of the road tour, because it wasn't about them. It wasn't about celebrating the start of the band. It was about celebrating the end of the band. Lonnie, did you happen to have a chance to read any of the Paul stuff this week?
I did. And Paul's wrong. It's not about the end of, it was not about the end of the band. It was about the culmination of the very last show, of it coming to an end, and how, and he's totally wrong. The whole history of the band should have been celebrated. It should not have been like every other show on the end of the road tour.
Mm-hmm.
We joked about it. We joked when those two shows were announced. We had a show, we speculated, you know, what could they do? What are they going to do for these final two shows? And I remember saying, you know, what if the last two shows are just like every other show on the end of the road tour? And we all laughed like, oh yeah, that'd be really stupid. We all laughed at how dumb that would be. And there's no way it'll be like that. And it's exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. And Paul's dead wrong. It should have been about the history of the band. If it wasn't about the history of the band, and it wasn't about celebrating everything, then why have them in New York where it all began? Why not have it in Tulsa, Oklahoma then? Well, this is just where the tour ends. If it's about the end of the band, why did you go back to New York and do it then? That's what Jericho should have followed up with. But he's not going to ask. He's not going to challenge Paul or anything like that.
No, boom. Very, very good point. I want to read the quotes, and this is, of course, off the Jericho podcast. Paul said, to be somewhat diplomatic, there were people who made unrealistic demands of what they required, and it's not about that. It wasn't, for example, a celebration of the beginning of the band. It was a celebration of 50 years of the band, as opposed to a tribute to the start. So as far as Ace Frehley, Peter, they weren't there for many reasons. And I've said it 100 times and I'll say it another 100 times. We couldn't be here today without what those guys did. And we couldn't be here without, Ken.
Yeah. But yeah. Sorry.
He contradicts himself a lot, Paul, on some of these same questions that he has in different interviews. But yeah, he likes to use the one that we couldn't be here with or without the, you know, and stuff. Yeah, I'm sure there was demands from Ace and maybe Peter, whether it was money or Ace wanted to be in makeup with them on stage for a couple of songs or not. You know, I don't know what the freaking big deal is. Just do it. And it's just two shows. It's okay. To me, it's okay to do that, you know, celebrate. Ace freaking designed the makeup. Jeez, give him a break. So I think they just squandered a really big opportunity on that those two shows. He also, Paul said, talking about, oh, well, we did have them on the screen, the video screen, you know, with, you know, overlays and all that kind of bullshit. Excuse my language. But yeah, that, it's like, come on, you know, you could have had them there, especially Bruce. I mean, he's the freaking been good from day one when he joined, never says any bad things, did everything great through the whole time, and he wasn't even asked. And that's coming out from, you know, Bruce's mouth. He said he was never asked. So he didn't have any demands. So why didn't you just have him? You know, it's just, and tribute, it was, you know, technically it's kind of a half a tribute, you know, band. You know, I don't have to say that, but it's kind of true in a sense. So I just don't like the whole thing. That was really messed up. I know it was Paul. It wasn't Gene. It was Paul. I guarantee it. So it's just too bad. The whole thing's too bad.
They weren't celebrating 50 years of the band, as far as I'm concerned, because of it all being a setup for the Avatars. So, you know, yeah, I respect Paul having his opinion of why people weren't there, but to say that it was a celebration of 50 years when it was the same set for 5 years, and yeah, sure, no one made us go to all these shows, but it was a setup for a commercial for the future. That's all it was. It was like a monster book or a gold coin. The expectation and anticipation of maybe special guests will join us, that was just strung along the whole fucking tour. It was just a carrot and we were the donkeys. But then again, who actually believed them? They said, I saw some fans saying, but they did invite the former members. They said it in interviews. That's not the same as inviting an original founding member of the band respectfully. You don't do it in public. If you're inviting someone properly, you're laying out the expectations and the reward, because this is Kiss. No one does shit for free when it comes to Kiss, and they should know that better than anyone. To think that their former members would do anything for free, or that Ace didn't have demands, as silly as some of them appear to be. Yeah, wait, I saw the news on David Johansen passing away. That's a fucking pisser. Here's a big fuck you to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Right. You left them out until they're all dead, you fucking bastards. Yeah. Sorry, what was I saying? Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I read one thing on there that kind of made me take little interest in the interview, was when he said, you know, well, what were you going to do? Roll a bunch of film footage of the old members? And right when I said that or saw that, I was like, yeah, why why not? Like, why not just show a bunch of things? I mean, you know what I don't understand is when Chris Squire died in Yes, they did a tour, okay, right after he passed away. And before the band went on stage, there was a 20-minute thing at the beginning of the show where they just had Chris Squire's guitar in the middle of the stage with a single spotlight on it. And on the back screen, they showed a bunch of footage of him from throughout his whole career. And they just said, and at the end, it was like, thank you, Chris, for all, we love you, blah, 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 at the end. How simple it is to do something just so simple like that. And the fans all loved it. Why couldn't Kiss have done something like that? Sure, and they could have even made it more grandiose in Kiss style, you know, make it like explosions and this and that, make it look really Kiss-like, right? And that wouldn't have took them that much to do that. And what would that have cost? You know, a few, you know, a couple $1,000 and 10 minutes before the show starts. You know, like, come on. That is so simple. Go ahead, Lenny. I know you want to say something. To...
Sorry. You know, on Farewell Tour 1, how they originally started those shows was there was like a 10-minute little like history of the band that they did, and they quickly axed it. And you know, we've all seen that footage before. But what stopped you from doing something like that, either before the show or after the main set and before the encore? Have like a 10-minute just a celebration of a history of the band for 10 minutes. Like Mark said, it wouldn't have cost you anything to do that. And it could have been you could have the people sitting there watching it on pay-per-view could have seen it, you know, in full view, and the people at the show could have seen it up on the Jumbotron. What was stopping you from doing that? And at least a tip of the cap to Ace, to Peter, to Vinny, Mark, Bruce, and everybody who's been in, right. What was that? There's nothing stopping you from doing that. It wouldn't have cost you much money to put something like that together. You have all that footage. You know, that's you could have at least done something like that. That was really, it's just, the more you think about it, the more it gets me riled up.
It almost seems like, and I really hope that it isn't this petty a thing, but it almost makes me feel like Paul just wants to stand on that stone till the very end on the top of the hill, showing that, you know, he did it his way. He didn't want to have anybody else, you know, tell him how to do it. He did it his way, and that's it. You know, I almost get that feeling that he didn't want to, you know, okay, I'll do it for you guys. I'll make, you know what I mean? He seems like that kind of guy. He's like, no, I don't want to do it, and we're not going to do it, which is so sad considering what happened throughout their whole career. All these people did it. I mean, especially Eric Carr. I mean, the man pretty much had the time of his life in the band when he first started. And, you know, a lot of, if you listen to the Kiss fans, they'll say that he was their favorite member for a long time when he was around and alive, right? So, you know, why not at least, you know, come on, think of him at least. If you're not going to think of the rest of the guys, like I said, a 10-minute thing would have been very simple.
All right. Everyone speak?
I could add a few things. The only thing I think was interesting in that interview was that some of the members had demands that we couldn't meet, sort of. That was the one thing that Paul Stanley said. And that means that they had been in contact with former members. I think that was the only interesting thing in that interview, the only thing that was new. Otherwise, it was just the same old, and we all know. I remember doing shows here on the Kiss FAQ previous, you know, before the last show, and no one of us had great expectations for that show. Maybe Ken did, but the rest of us were more were more realistic, and we knew nothing special would happen. So we knew it prior to the show happening. But I think that was pretty interesting that he said some of the members had, I don't recall the quote, but it was something like they had outrageous demands. So they must have been in contact with
probably. No, Ace, I don't think they had to be in contact because Ace was saying his shit in the press. Ace was saying, I want $500,000.
Okay, so they never even bothered. So they didn't even bother to call them. And Bruce, well, it doesn't bring a lot of, you know, interest from the regular fans. So why bother? I think Paul, that's the way Paul thinks. So I think it was what it was. It wasn't those two concerts seemed pretty fun to me, but it was more of the same that we've seen for the previous year. So I don't know. It was lazy of them, and I think Ken has a point, or if it was Mark, that Paul Stanley wants to reign supreme.
Yeah, I enjoyed the shows for what they were. But it was, again, more about the fans and getting back to the hotel and talking with you guys immediately after.
And do the encores.
Yeah, and the encores back at my hotel room on my own. Yeah. So let's finish today with Evan and Nick. They've dropped another song that they're working on that they just happened to work together. With, I can't remember the third fella's name, but it sounds like that they've got 10 songs. And I'm actually okay with this. I always wipe anything to do with the kids of Kiss off the main FAQ channel because I'm like, these guys have to stand on their own and make it legitimately with Amber Wild or Amber Waves or whatever it is, or Jupiter's Crush or the previous project that Evans worked on. I know he's a legitimate guitarist. I know that he's got the chops. I know he's got skills. I know that he's got his father's stage presence, that he's got a rapport with the crowd and knows how to work it. To me, he just doesn't have the music yet, or the band members. To be perfectly honest, and no disrespect to any of those guys who he plays with. I'm just talking my opinion. So I was excited to see him and Nick when they first had the Instagram of doing Sounds of Silence and harmonizing. It took me back to 87 and the Exposed video when Gene and Paul were doing harmonizing and talking about busking on street corners, you know, bullshitting. And all that. And it actually made me smile And then they drop the slightly longer one of them just kind of jamming out an idea. And I'm like, this stuff has potential in its own right, regardless of who their parents are. You know, this isn't Nepo baby music, though I'm sure that'll play a part of it. And I have no problem with nepotism. You know, your parents work hard. If they want to fucking give you a leg up, that's their fucking business, not anyone else's. So I'm actually interested in seeing what these two guys can do. Nick can sing. Hell yeah. Evan can fucking play and sing, you know, so it's not Kiss 2. It has nothing to do with Kiss. Lonnie.
I think it's very interesting. I think it's something that I think a lot of people in the Kiss Army have talked about over the years. Like, oh, they should collaborate and do something together. You know, I know where Mark's going to go when we get to him, yeah, but I think it's fun at least. And I think that you're right. It's going to have a sense of nepotism to it. But I also feel like with, you know, there's not a whole lot going on in the Kiss world. I mean, there's these box sets coming out and this and that, but I think a lot of Kiss fans will at least be intrigued by it and give it a listen and see, you know, what it's all about. So I'm definitely intrigued by it. I'm rooting it on. So I don't think it's going to go where Mark thinks it's going to go. So, but I think that would be silly, but I'm definitely intrigued by it.
Yep. Ken.
Yeah. I agreed that, you know, if there was a possibility that the two of them could get together and do something, though I personally don't think it would ever be, you know, Kiss. I think they would try to do their own thing, obviously. And it seems like they've written 10 songs. The most recent song, I really like the sound of the groove of it. There's something there to that latest song. I could hear it as a rock song, and hopefully, I don't know if they're gonna do rock or half mellow rock. I don't know, but I could see that. I could hear that as a good rock song. There's something there. It has good structure to it, and it sounds good. So it seems their voices, you know, blend well together, just like Gene and Paul did. So yeah, there could be something there. I hope they, you know, give it a shot, and we'll see what happens with it. Now, Mark.
Yeah, I thought that the little song that they posted was better than the most recent Amber Wilde song that didn't come out too long ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm just going to say this. I've said it before, episodes and episodes back again. I was laughed at, and you know, even when I implied that, you know, those two guys should get together and do something. This is before they even did anything together, before it was even a thought. Then they did something together. People are loving it and embracing it, and that's great. I think it's a great thing that they're doing that, you know. And like I said, and I think I put it on a message board somewhere I messaged something about it, but I said that this is, they're going extremely smart about this. And of course, they'd have two very smart people in their circle, their fathers, who could guide them through this, which could, you know, take your time. There's no need to rush with this, you know. They can just, you know, put out some stuff together, get people used to the idea of those two working together, you know, because they have one unfortunate problem with them doing stuff on their own. They will be forever in the shadow of their fathers, forever. I don't care what anybody says, they will always be in the shadow of them. Nothing that they do will be, they'll able to break out of that above Kiss. Because unfortunately, Kiss was such a huge thing in American, you know, history and, you know, Musicana and all that stuff. You know, it, like I said, Kiss was like as American as apple pie. So it's hard to break through that and do something better than that to make you them forget about their fathers. Okay. So I think that they're just going about this very smart. Release some music, do some stuff together. And when the time is right and the people that they find that's the perfect fit for it, I still believe wholeheartedly, maybe not next year, maybe not in 3 years, but give it time, because if there's one thing that Gene and Paul will never want to have happen is for Kiss to fade away completely. And what better way for it to continue is to have their own flesh and blood continue the legacy. And if anything, I think KISS fans would have a much better time with having the offspring of KISS people continue the band than having somebody like Tommy Thayer or these other people get dressed up in makeup who have no real connection to it other than just being hired into it. That's what I've always thought.
But a great comment from Super Zapper, Wolfgang Van Halen. He carries on the legacy of his father. You can hear it at times in his music, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Yeah. If Nick happens to have an "oh yeah" or a growl, that because he has the DNA, I'm okay with that. But let's just say this is not KISS 2. This is something else. You know,
not yet.
Like Nelson. This is like Nelson. Nelson wasn't like Ricky Nelson, were they? You know, so
yeah, but they did nothing
it's just,
either.
It's just
they faded out as eventually too.
It's just like just the fans need to understand. Don't be fucking stupid. Don't be silly and think that these guys are going to slap on the paint and be their parents.
I think the problem might be that, you know, that old KISS song from Hot in the Shade, Silver Spoon, they're kind of born with a silver spoon up their ass, you know. They don't have the grit or the will to make it, because they know that in a decade or one and a half decade, they will have all the money that they need until the end of their own lives. So I think the problem with these two guys, they have the talent, they have the expression, they know how to make great music, but I think they're kind of resting on their laurels, you know, thinking that we got the KISS money in a decade or two, and why bother? So I haven't really seen, you know, that
drive,
the will to create. You know, for example, Gene's boy there, Nick, he's been doing, you know, some great stuff musically. He sang a song on one of Bruce's records, sounded great. For a while, he made comics until people realized that he was copying other stuff, so that came to an end. But he's doing this and that. They don't have the drive. Remember Gene and Paul back in the 70s? I mean, they were playing the...
Starving.
Yeah, starving, playing for you know, scraps. But still, working each and every day. The drive.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
But only one. All I want to say is just this. Back in the early 80s, Dweezil Zappa said he wanted nothing to do with his father's stuff. He wanted to break out on his own and do his own thing. And right now, the biggest part of his career is him doing the whole Zappa play Zappa thing now. I think it's just a matter of time. Yeah. It might not happen in 5 years. It may not happen, but eventually.
But isn't that the same thing? They're kind of resting on the laurels. You know, they try it on their own way. Wow, this is tough. This takes a lot of effort.
Yeah.
Why don't I just use my father's name and do something with that? That's much easier, and you know, you gain a lot more money that way. So I think Gene and Gene's boy Nick and the other guy, I think they will sort of, you know, they will never make any substantial, you know, mark.
Nick and the other guy, music. That's the name of the band.
No. Look up to their fathers and, you know, use the KISS money.
Yeah, but even rich people have struggles.
Yeah, you know, everyone has.
Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons.
Especially, you
know,
Paul.
Grew up with challenges, so that comes into their art and their lives. But, you know, Sophie's made some, I was nearly going to say decent music, but I haven't exactly listened to any of it. But she did get some awards and stuff and some, you know, press out of it. So.
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, Nick, he's a great singer. He's a great performer. Yeah, but you know, you play a club and then you go back to your mansion. I mean, it doesn't work. Yeah, but he earned it, you know.
No, David Lee Roth is privileged. Yeah, his father was a doctor.
Yeah, but it's not the
same. Who knows? How about this?
Yeah.
Guys, I level this challenge. Let's see what they do and then judge them.
Yeah, I said give it time and let's see what happens.
You know, because if they're singing the blues about a lukewarm latte at Starbucks, you know, then it's okay to savage them. But I want to see if anything comes of this, number one, and then I'll judge it musically on whether it works for my tastes.
They're talented. They don't have the drive.
Let's find out.
We'll see. Yeah.
You'll see.
All right. So that's a bunch of topics on the board this week. You know, thanks for joining us live while we've, you know, gone around the table as much as we could. We skipped a few topics. Unfortunately, we skipped the 25th anniversary of the Blue Room. So I'm going to make up for that by going off and listening to it. I want to thank everyone who's joined us live this week with your comments. As always, they're very much a part of the show and make it fun doing. So for now, from Lonnie, from Ken, Mark, Daniel, and myself, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.